Across the last 3 years, Century has been on a mission to fundamentally transform the model of care for our clients, our staff, and the industry.
We will share with you our journey towards ascent-based care, the lessons we've learned, and the people we've learned them with.
We're your hosts, Timothy Yeager
and Hillary Laney.
Welcome to the HRE Podcast. Erin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell us about yourself.
I'm a BCBA. I've worked at Centria since February in a DCS role that was RCD, and really gotten a chance to move through the organization. I've worked in a bunch of centers and with home, and now in LSAA, and it's been a blast.
You've been a chameleon.
Yeah, I kind of like it though, because it's always something new and exciting. And the reason I came to Centria was to learn and grow, and to like get a bigger sense of like, you know, business decision making. And so seeing how the different programs work has been a blessing as much as it's been a challenge.
I'm just reminded right now that I interviewed you initially before you started working for us.
Yes.
Right?
Twice, I think.
I interviewed you twice. Yeah. And initially it wasn't the right time.
Correct.
Right. So tell me about like the decision to come to Centria, what attracted you to the company and how that's, you know, worked out for you.
I was going to ask that too.
Yeah. When we first talked, I was at an organization that I loved. I will always love having worked there. And I thought, you know, there was going to be opportunity for growth. It was a smaller company. And as you know, the smaller the company, the fewer the opportunities to move up. And I think I came to a point where I realized I am really looking for growth. I really want to take on more responsibility, have a higher view of all of the business decision making. And it wasn't going to happen for me there. So it was a grieving process, actually. And I tried to give you guys and give the other company like 3 months notice. And Kelly's like, well, that's not going to work. She's like, how about 2 months? And I said, okay. And so I really was just pursuing a growth opportunity. And it's been awesome being in a big organization, and it's a big ship. I say that all the time. And it's, you have to make different decisions. And, I love it.
I did something similar with my jump too. It was hard. And Timothy wanted to murder me when I gave 9 weeks notice to leave my company to come to Centria. So I can relate. It's hard to say goodbye to something that's been so special.
I did say yes.
You did say yes. Yeah. You said yes. You didn't have much of a choice. Tell us about your happy, relaxing and gates. What makes you HRE?
Yeah, I think about this a lot. I have a few. So one of my favorites is, especially in the summer in Phoenix, it's very hot. So Friday night, I don't have to work on Saturday or Sunday. I have the house to myself. I'm sitting in my specific chair that the air conditioning blows directly onto. Have the Kardashians on the TV, and I'm scrolling on my phone. So I'm not really watching it, but I'm scrolling. Nobody's bothering me, and I probably have chips and salsa and a Diet Coke.
Girl dinner.
Yes, girl dinner. Friday night, I'm cold. When it's hot outside, nothing's better.
That's great.
Yeah. But also, if I have a day off in the middle of the week and I get to work out in the morning, I love that. And then another one that came to mind today was I'm a big women's basketball fan. So when the Phoenix Mercury are playing a rival team and they win, there's like literally nothing better. It didn't happen a lot last season,
unfortunately. Who's
your rival team? Chicago Sky and the Dallas Wings, I would say.
You were born and raised in Phoenix?
No, I was born and raised in California.
What part?
I lived all over. So I was born in Northern California. When I was 12, we moved to the Central Coast. And then I went to University of Cal State Long Beach and worked in the Inland Empire. And I lived a year in Singapore, and then I came back from Singapore, lived in Long Beach again, couldn't go home, and ended up coming out to Phoenix.
Wow.
Traveler.
So, yeah.
Where in the Central Coast?
Santa Maria.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet.
So you came to Centria, which coming to a big company all by itself, I think, is a big decision. But I feel like, have really tried to attract people who want to be on a mission with us. So tell us about what the Foundations of Care has meant to you and your role here at Centria, and what it has looked like in your role to be a part of it?
Yeah, great timing on that question, because I literally just finished mentorship this week. I checked off the last box.
Congratulations.
Watched the last video. That's all I had to do.
Your shirt should be in the mail.
Yes. I messaged Britt immediately. I said, I'm done. I did it. There was a time I thought I might not. So it was really exciting. But I think, you know, when I had done a presentation and talked about some of my reflections, and the biggest one for me is that as a clinical director, I carry the pressure of feeling like I need to know how to support my team, whomever is on their caseload, and whatever the clients are, and whatever the behaviors look like. But I don't spend as much time learning clinically at that level. And so I realized that my ability to support them capped out at my own clinical experience. And I always, like, I carried this weight of, like, inadequacy, that if we had a tough client, I wasn't going to be able to help them. And that's really what the Foundations of Care and the mentorship has done for me, is it's added a tool to my tool belt that allowed me to navigate challenging behaviors in a way that I couldn't before.
I remember that. So when you were first being supported by Lisa, I remember there were a couple clients that you were really passionate about bringing on, but you shared with her that you didn't feel you could support them and you really needed us to support them.
Yep.
And she and I had a lot of lengthy conversations about that. And of course we ultimately helped support, and in those conversations, she and I talked, and this is a theme of the ideal is that we don't support, that like the director supports and then they come to us when they feel like they need an additional layer. And so I love to hear you say that, because knowing that you now feel more confident to step in and do the basics, like make sure that we have a really enriched environment, make sure that we're responding kindly to our clients. Anyone can do it if they want to lean in. It's a great skill to have learned and to be able to share with any team that you're going to support future forward.
Yeah, and I'll say I graduated mentorship, but I am not proficient. You know, to me, it's like passing your BCBA exam just means that you understood the task list and could answer some questions, but it doesn't mean that you have experience in the job and that you're an expert by any means. So I'm just excited to continue working on that and learning and growing so that I can better support the team.
I love that. And I have another follow-up question, because we are now embarking on a journey to make sure that our directors are experts. We want our directors to be able to do these, do this approach in its entirety with excellence, not just base level, not just like you did it once, you're good to go, but with the excellence that I might bring to the table or someone on my team might. So thinking about that and the mentorship you just went through, what would you say you still need to have experience with or grow in to be able to say confidently, to some degree, I am an expert?
I need to go through what the supervisors went through, that I am an experiential learner, only speaking for myself. And so watching them have to write the plans and get feedback on the plans, and the level of support they got in that mentorship was incredible. And I need to do what they did to feel like I'm going to be able to support them with that.
I agree. I'm glad you feel that way, because that's what we're going to try to do. Yeah.
You mentioned growth, right? Yeah. As a goal of yours. And I was wondering if like this mentorship's allowed you or changed your practice in any way, to where you've seen your skill set, not just as a supervisor or, you know, or as a director, but like just your views on ABA and in your practice, has it grown?
Yeah, it's been a major like pivoting point for me. I think because I didn't have that tool in my tool belt, and I was constantly anxious about coming in contact with a client that I wasn't able to support, that I decided to put down the clinical hat. And I would say I'm not a clinical person. Like, I don't actively pour into that bucket. I pour into the business bucket or the leadership bucket. And I do really value those things. But having this tool has allowed me to say, that's a story.
Yeah.
That I'm not a clinical person, that's a story. And I can choose to put that story down and pick up the clinical piece again and maybe not be afraid of that.
Yeah,
I'll never be Hillary, and that's okay. But, you know, in talking with you recently, well, she's an expert at this, and what do I want to be an expert on? And so it's not... PFA and SBT and the Foundations of Care are incredible and so aligned to the mission at Centria. But what lights me up and fills my cup is RFT and PEAK. And so I'm like, I can choose to be an expert in those things and act. And I feel more confident in being able to do that.
That's so awesome. We recently had a really great conversation, Aaron and I, when I was in Arizona, about her vision of what she could be at Centria. And I said to her, one of the things we really value as a clinical team is people coming to the table with their own perspective and their own expertise. Like, you don't need more of me. Nope. You don't want more of me anyway.
Trust me. I'm joking.
No, you're not, but that's okay. And you don't need another Emily Callahan, and you don't, because like they fill a need.
Yeah.
Everyone on the team has a very niche approach to solving problems that we have, and it's an important problem to solve, and one person can't do everything.
100%.
And so when we talked, you know, Aaron had asked me, like, what would it take? What is the company looking for growth? And I said, we want people who are strong and confident in their areas of knowledge and can bring it to the table and educate the rest of us. Like, because I don't know how to do, I took a peak training like 7 years ago. Yeah. And like, yeah, I could run a peak assessment, but I could never build out peak across the company. And that's one of our goals is to do that. And so having somebody who already has that as a passion, what I told Aaron is grow that, like lean into that and make that your special area that people go, oh, you want to learn about peak? Go talk to Aaron Cook.
Yeah.
Right? Just like people think, oh, you want to talk about PFA, go talk to Hillary. He'll play Hillary Laney, but that's a good area.
What I love about that is I remember our first interview when you talked about like almost like just like divorcing yourself from the clinical side altogether and just going down this operations side. And what I hope within our organization, and especially from like a Lucid leadership side, is like the clinical director is a leader and overseeing clinical operations, right? And so there's hopefully you're getting a mix of both. To double down on what Hillary said is, as an organization, we want like passionate people to lead. And if RFT is the direction that we're headed as an organization, that's like the next iteration of like our curriculum and like what we want to accomplish. And so that's a passion of yours. Like, don't just know it, do it.
Yeah.
And in if there's something that we can do to help support you to do it, then let's. We want to provide that.
When Timothy says do it, he means take the place you own, your center, and teach your people to do it.
I left our conversation and I wrote down, like, what do you want to be an expert at? And so I wrote down, like, peak and RFT, and I said, how are you going to do that? And then I wrote out a list of things, revisiting tools that I've used previously, and then what do I need to do moving forward? I have some other resources and people that I feel are experts in the field that once I've done some of the work to go back and revisit the previous trainings, I can ask them, what's the next steps?
You know what I think is bringing this back to our podcast theme, because it's very aligned. There are people right now currently trying to marry ACT and SBT. And it's something that I think is very aligned in having someone who can help marry those two, like have the knowledge base on both sides and the expertise on the ACT side, which we don't currently have in our department, is something really exciting and I think very powerful. And so do it, like show it and let us learn from you.
Yeah. I think that ACT can be transformative in the same way that the Foundations of Care have added another tool to the tool belt to navigate these challenging behaviors and supporting clients, because there's so many kids that have trauma or they have a lot of language and they get stuck and we don't have the tools to help them navigate out of that. I think it can be really incredible.
Agreed.
I've seen it be really amazing. I think
about our challenge to like, you're going to have to help correct me here on the language, but like when we've identified this is a point that a client can't persist through.
Yeah.
Right? Like those are the committed actions, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we're doing work in a way that's aligned to values, like there is a point at which like, you have to persist.
You choose to push through challenge. You choose to push
through a challenge because it's aligned with the path that you want to go down.
Yeah. But you have to be willing to sit in acceptance and diffuse from, you know, previous thoughts.
For sure.
Gotta love the Hexaflex.
Yeah.
Speaking of this, would you like to share with us anything you've witnessed in your time with us through the Foundations of Care, like a client success story or something you've observed that maybe was transformative to observe or to be a part of?
Yeah, there's been a few moments, probably more since I saw you in action, but that client in particular that you brought up earlier was a client that I worked in my previous organization for a year, I maxed out my credit card of clinical skills with that kiddo, and we just never saw consistent progress, and you jumped in, and you're like, I get it, this is what's happening, this is what you need to do, like this, and immediate change, and it was incredible. I have so much respect for that love like high view of things and being able to just know what's happening and know how to make a difference. But in Tempe, we've had maybe, you know, one client in particular that now lets kids play with them, and they go from the LSAA side to the Centria Center side, and tons of kids in both places, and just absolute chaos, and can totally flexibly navigate that. And that's amazing.
What do you think made that change for that client?
I don't, you know, I wasn't there for all of it, so I really only see the result of everyone's hard work, but I would say slow shaping. And just, I think that has to be it, just really slow shaping. I think my favorite thing, though, that I've seen is when the foundational plan alone makes a difference.
Yeah. Mm.
And you just really build a robust plan, and your clinicians train their staff on it, and that's it.
That's all you need.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Then we're good to go.
Clients that, you know, you're involving the behavior excellence team, you're like, we're going to need some help with this guy. And then the answer is, nope, you don't. It's just, you just need to do a foundational plan.
That's my favorite, too.
Yeah.
That's why I feel so passionate about the foundational plan. I know that it's a lot of work, right? Writing a plan and training to a plan is a lot of work, especially for a more complex learner. But so many times we've seen that happen, and it's such a powerful moment to be like, it's powerful and it's sad that just making an environment and setting up contingencies appropriately is such a parsimonious answer, which I have a parsimony tattoo, if you did not already know that. But it's kind of sad that we didn't go to that answer first and we put all this behavior modification in place. It does take work to kind of untangle and set things up appropriately, but it saves so much work on the part of the clinician, the technician, and the client to do that from the start rather than trying to build out these complex reinforcement contingencies and learning pathways. Some kids just need the better environment, and they're pretty good to go.
Yeah, and then they're happy.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
And I just want to say, like, you don't have to be happy all the time to be learning, right? That's what we were talking about, was like there's a point at which you choose to engage when it's challenging.
Yeah.
And that is almost, I'm talking about that tomorrow, but it's almost its own form of HRE, of like, I'm okay in this challenge. Yeah. And I don't need to get away from it to reset myself. I can handle it.
Yep.
You spoke about foundational plans. How have the use of foundational plans, like in your center, like have you seen changes, or like how has that shifted, like the culture, the practices, like what you observe when you walk through your center?
Yeah, it has. I would say that across the board, the clinicians are more flexible. Hmm. And then they're more flexible with the clients, and then the technicians are more flexible with the clients, and then the clinicians are more flexible with the technicians. So across the board, they're more flexible. And that, to me, is how you make it through life.
You have like to be permission to, like, give grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love that.
It goes to what we've talked about a lot, which is we have focused so much on the foundations of care for our clients.
Yeah.
And I think Timothy and I have had more and more conversations about shifting that focus on the values in action with our clients to the values in action with our staff.
Yes, that's something I'm really passionate about, and I've done a lot of work with the clinicians on my caseload, and saying, they're like, this technician came and did this. And I said, okay, but what training did you provide? And how are you taking data? Have you talked to them about it? They just want to go straight to the write-up. Because they don't know what else to do. Mm. And you have to assume positive intent. You have to challenge your own story about what you think is happening, and you have to be willing to give grace. And we had a little bit of a gossip problem in our center. I think that's very common when you have a group of people together in the same room. And I told them it doesn't improve psychological safety. It doesn't teach you any skills, and it doesn't improve the outcomes for the clients. And what we're going to do instead is we're going to be a team, and we're going to support each other, and we're going to give each other grace. And the same way we support our clients when they need help or they need support with something and they don't have a skill, we teach them that. We're going to do that for each other.
Yeah.
I love that.
What are the demands in the moment that we can pull back?
Yeah.
What are the skills that are lacking?
What in the environment is setting us up for failure?
Yeah.
Yep.
And how can we as a leader support and deliver change?
I think that's true leadership.
And how do you want people to feel when you walk away from them?
Mm.
And how do you want them to feel as a result of your interactions?
Or when you're walking towards them. Are you a CMLR? Yeah. Have you conditioned yourself as a punisher?
An SDP.
Yeah.
I almost was going to say that I saw a quote recently, acting as if it wasn't your presentation, but You cite something in your presentation that like people don't remember like what you did, but they remember how you
became. It's Maya Angelou.
Yeah.
People never don't remember what you did or what you said, but they'll always remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
And I think I'll give away some of my talk, but the takeaway is like contingencies are not the problem. How we manage contingencies is, and we can make a choice to choose to manage a contingency with grace and with the other person's dignity in mind. Or with our goal in mind. And
it's not just the what, it's the how.
It's the how.
Absolutely.
The journey matters is more than the destination. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Everything's a choice. And we control our expectations and that's it.
And our actions.
Yeah, and our actions, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of SCP though, I used to want to make a shirt that says I'm with SDP.
Yeah, why?
I don't know, just to be funny.
I love it. Ask
ABA shirts.
Yeah.
Ask Jocelyn to use her Cricut and make you one.
Yeah, or I wanted to make another one that says, I'm being attacked.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you having the conversation with us.
Yeah.
And flying here.
I love to travel. I'll come on anytime.
I appreciate it. What do you see for your future?
That's a great question. I don't know. The easiest answer is just continuing to learn and grow.
And see where the world takes you. Do you have any big aspirations?
No.
You don't?
Not really. I like to be in charge. So I like to be a leader. So I just see myself continuing to grow. There's little things like I'd like to get to a point where I'm not having to be in person, where I can travel and work and have some more flexibility in that way. But that's really it. So long as I'm continuing to be challenged and I'm learning and I'm growing and I'm taking on more responsibility and getting access to those bigger picture things, I'm flexible with everything else.
I love that.
Seems to be like your journey, your story is, I was thinking about like the different jobs you've had at Centuria combined with like your travel and movement. The ability to be open and be flexible to like what's ahead.
Lean in.
And just leaning in.
Yeah. I said that this week. I'm flexible. I'm open to anything. I'll give you my very real feedback on what I think the pros and the cons are, but I'll do anything.
Hmm. And I think that's wonderful. And in some ways could be your downfall. And it's also okay to have boundaries and say, this is what I would prefer.
Absolutely. That is hard for me for sure. I can acknowledge that.
Because some people and many people in this world would say, well, Erin will always say yes, so let's just ask her. Yeah.
Yes. I know I love to be a yes person, but I also know my learning style, that I have to understand something like inside and out, and to the point where I understand it from that higher perspective, but it takes time.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not in a position or in a role that's really stable for a longer period of time, it takes me a lot longer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's where that downfall is. For sure.
But Noah's powerful boundaries are important.
Yeah.
I have a question I've been like sitting on and I wasn't sure if I'm gonna ask. I'm gonna ask it.
Okay.
Arizona.
Yes.
Is an area that Century has struggled in for quite some time. We haven't made the best decisions at times. We've had a reputation that's suffered as a result, and we're working really hard to like change that. We're you and others. We've had a lot more leadership that's on the ground. Part of the community.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, I'm sure that was in the back of your mind when you made the decision to come to Centuria, is like the reputation that you'd heard. And I wonder what the risk that you took to do that and like what you found once you got here and how maybe the story or the truth and the false part of that narrative that existed.
Yeah, it was a risk. But in this market, in the way that BCBAs can move around, even clinical directors, it's a small risk. Mm. If I don't like it, I can go somewhere else, and that's that's an unfortunate situation, but it's true.
That is the truth of our labor market, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but here's what I found is it's probably been a while since you had a case, but when you take over a case from another BCBA, there's 1,000 things you would change and do different, and you want to sit in this place of judgment of like, I can't believe they did it this way. That's not the way I would do it. And I think that's what I learned, is just to give grace in those situations. And that's what I brought to Centuria is, everybody tells a story. Everybody has their own experiences. They don't have to be my experiences. And this company is full of some incredible clinicians and people that are willing to challenge why we're doing things and ask for feedback and do better when they need to. That's what I've really found. And then in terms of Arizona, I know my passion for the Arizona market, and having helped have a hand in growing it and making it what it is. And I knew I could bring that to the table. So I wasn't too worried about the Arizona market because I have a vision for Centria in Arizona, and I'm just dogged in that commitment to that. Like, we're going to show up at community events,
yeah,
and we're going to represent, and we're going to take this big, box company mentality that people look at us like, and we're going to change that perspective by just being in the community.
Love that.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been really wonderful.
Thank you.
You're like a, did you know that you're basically like a therapist, the things that you say?
Yes, I hear that a lot. I explored getting a master's MFT,
mm-hmm,
just so that I didn't have to give a disclaimer.
That I'm not a licensed psychologist. Yeah.
But then I'm like not ready to go back to school yet.
Yeah, I hear that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you
for flying here. Thank you for the work that you do with us at Centria. And thank you for taking the small but risk to be part of this company.
It paid off. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Awesome.
And that concludes another episode of the HRE Podcast.
Thanks for listening. If the HRE Podcast is a part of your synthesized reinforcers, let us know what else would make the perfect reinforcement context for you in the comments below. And join us next time.